Okay, and we're back here at 1690. And I've got Yale on the phone, and I've managed to fix up that glitch. It is 924. And good morning, Yale. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, Carl. Thanks for letting me on the show here. It's been a while since we've talked, so it's great to hear your voice again.
Actually, yeah, great to hear your voice. And I followed some of your exploits in Florida via Facebook, and like I was saying when I was talking before, it sounds like you're having a lot of fun working as a journalist out there.
Yeah, but I think really with my organization, I've been able to do a lot of. I'm working for watchdog.org right now. We sort of do waste, fraud, and abuse anywhere it may happen. I've really been able to cover everything from the Scott Walker gubernatorial recall election in Wisconsin to all the RNC police state happenings in Tampa to everything in between, so it really has been an adventure.
Oh, okay. Now, waste fraud, there sounds like a lot of it going on south of the 49th parallel.
I'm pretty busy every day, I would say.
Yeah. Now, the governor of Florida, Rick Scott, from my perspective, would be what I refer to as a Tea Party wanker. Can you tell me about him?
Well, Governor Rick Scott is a former healthcare executive. He was elected in 2010, as you said, in the Tea Party wave. He really has committed himself to cutting the budget and presenting a smaller version of Florida government for its residents. Obviously, there have been a lot of several controversies surrounding him. Personally, you know, I've met the guy, interviewed him. He just seems like he's the forefront of a consultant's dream. Some political consultant put him up. He seems like a good guy. He's got a good resume. The guy, he's just not very personable, and I think that really has come across in how most people have covered him.
Now, my understanding was that actually Rick Scott was prosecuted for fraud, I believe it was Medicare fraud, was it not?
Well, he had a part of a company that was involved in some sort of Medicare fraud. It wasn't him personally, it was the company. But as corporations are legal fictions, legal entities, he was absolved of any criminal prosecution. It was the company that took the fall.
I see. Okay. Now, voting this year was pretty, or in the past election, was pretty difficult in Florida, and that was attributed to measures that he took to make it more difficult for Florida voters to get to the polls.
Well, I guess you could say that, but really, at the end of the day, I did a lot of on-the-ground reporting in Florida on that day. Election day was very chaotic for most, but it was really all centered down in the Miami-Dade County region. And that's really mostly because they have way too many people per poll location. And it's something that really has not been addressed by the legislature or the local election authorities for a long time. So you have to imagine in Miami, you have the downtown around the McGill area. Everyone having to come to exactly one poll booth. That's exactly what was going on in Miami, and it was really hard to try to count the votes. People were voting until 2 or 3 in the morning, and that really messed up a lot of the votes. And, well, you never know. It could have swung an election or two. Hopefully not.
That sounds like the kind of thing that could happen in a third world country, and of course we recall what happened back in the 2000 election. How has this been allowed to just fester and get worse in the intervening time?
Yeah, I think it's something that obviously the local election authorities always have control over. So there's only so much the state government and the federal government can do. I guess they can give them more money, or even in the international sense, the UN election observers tried to come over to America, but they obviously were told that they would be shot in Texas and other places. At the end of the day, there's not much really we can do except try to pressure the local authorities to be way more accountable, which I've been trying to do with my work, and just tell them that we need more resources to get people to vote. I've only been a U.S. citizen now for 3 or 4 years, and as hard as it was for me to become one, I still think I, as much as everyone else, deserve the right to vote.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've been getting down in the muck in local politics, and they do say all politics is local. How has that been as an experience for you? What kind of learning?
Yeah, it's been definitely something to pay attention to, and that, you know, we've always hear these, and Carl, you and I have been doing this for a couple of years now, just going on the radio and playing interviews with big league politicians or people you can't really touch or interview directly, and I really have the chance to get in the dirt and to call these people on their stuff directly. when I was a reporter in North Carolina after I just left CJLO, I was grilling the local sheriff on why they had a reconnaissance drone. I mean, this is a small North Carolina county, not more than 50,000 people, yet they have a drone to go and spy on people. And I was able to ask him directly why they had it, what's the point, and I was able to write a huge expose. So I think as far as local politics is concerned, it's great to be able to hold officials accountable, not having to rely on the same corporate media shill that don't ask the right questions, have the same bias towards power that we see each and every day.
Right. Now, that sounds like a fascinating story. Please tell me a little bit more about that. Drones over North Carolina for what?
Well, this was actually a local sheriff in the county that I was writing in, Gaston County. They had a drone that was used basically with federal money. The whole point about local police departments is that they received huge influx of money with all these Homeland Security Department grants, and it allowed them to purchase all sorts of cool weapons and gear. And in Gaston County, they bought a reconnaissance drone. And they used this to fly over, and I have one reported case. They flew over the local fair and were trying to get eyes on the local motorcycle gang, as that's what they framed it as. But actually, it was just a group of old-timers who came together and had a Sunday morning motorcycle ride, and they were just trying to write about, as they do with all their friends, and the drone actually zoomed in on their faces. It was that high-tech. It was able to zoom in and take pictures of who was there at the fair and who was gathered at the motorcycle gang.
That's crazy. Now, drones, of course, are the future of modern-day police forces, I would guess.
Yeah, I would say, though, that in Florida, we are considerably lucky. There is a bill, and I was there when it was passed. There was a bill that was passed in state legislature that would ban all types of surveillance drones being used by law enforcement anywhere in Florida. Now, that passed committee, and it will be voted on here very soon, and I expect that it'll probably get signed by the governor. As crazy as we all may think Rick Scott to be, I don't really think he would pass this up. This is an issue that a lot of people in Florida are very passionate about. Certainly anybody around the country, they don't want surveillance drones going over them or spying on them in their home.
And yet more surveillance seems to be the direction the U.S. federal government is taking.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I did a few interviews here in Florida about warrantless wiretapping, something that obviously, for some reason, is never talked about except in Hollywood films and television shows. The government is openly now listening to basically every phone conversation that people are having, in or out. Everything is recorded. That's why him.com of Mega Upload has been very vociferous about his Mega project, because he's talking about how the NSA and the FBI and everyone here in this country is listening to all these phone calls and collecting all this information, because they think we're all terrorists, Carl. It's a travesty.
Well, yeah, and of course, going back to the Bush administration, when they gave themselves the right to do this, everyone seemed to understand that it was only going to get worse, and it didn't really matter who the next fellow was, and in spite of, I guess, I'm sure a lot of Democrats at some point had hopes that this would end, the opposite has happened. There has been far more warrantless wiretapping and surveillance of emails and everything people do on the Internet. What do you see for the future of this?
I really have forgotten to always view this as a partisan thing. I really have put partisan politics behind me, and the only reason I say that is because as soon as one guy gets into power, his team forgets everything that they once stood for. And this is very obvious with what's going on with the war protest. Obama is very openly bringing us into all these wars in Libya, and now we're trying to get involved in Syria, and now we're sending the troops and the military planes to Mali, and this is without any sort of approval from the people. This is being done unilaterally. And if George Bush was doing this, there would be an outcry. It'd be on the front page of every major newspaper. There'd be impeachment hearings, but we're seeing none of that. And it's very disheartening for me and for a lot of people who believed in the system and believed in, you know, the Democratic Republic that this was supposed to be, but the accountability is not there. I'm trying to do my part as a local journalist, but again, more people have to ask questions, and more people have to be skeptical, and more people have to shun the party labels that just allow them to play this us versus them game.
Right, right, which was kind of what I was saying, that it didn't really matter who followed George Bush. Once the government took these powers for themselves, they were never going to give them back. And I believe Jeremy Scahill makes the point in a documentary that's playing in at the big Sundance. And he was massively disappointed that these same issues that would, you know, send, you know, people on the left side of the political spectrum into the streets, well, things have gotten worse, and people aren't protesting, and he's found that completely disheartening so far as the politics are concerned. And
I think it plays into it that media shapes our reality. And if you are reading the local stories or the big stories that are top now, it's all entertainment news. It's not at all what's really happening. There's no critical analysis. I mean, I don't own the television anymore because I think it's so ludicrous what they have and they're showing the people here in this country. I think Canadians at least have access to more skeptical news and entertainment. Of course, you know, we can't always get the truth from CBC, but we do have radio stations like CJLO and definitely a lot of other sources. So it's definitely helpful to look at the alternative media. That's where I've always staked sort of my hopes and desires, and I hope to see it continue.
Well, it's actually not terribly different. The politics that we see south of the 49th parallel have now made their way in a large way to this side of the 49th parallel, Yale, and it's more than a little disheartening. You get the same kind of wankerish reporting from the CBC, from CTV, from Global, where they avoid questions. They're afraid to confront the Harper government, for example, for the same reason the press was afraid to confront the Bush administration, is that they would deny them access. So you can't do your job as a reporter. So you always have to, you're not allowed to be confrontational. You're not allowed to ask tough questions.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I even saw a report, I believe, in La Presse about how apparently the Harper government is putting forth a law to make sure that if it's a daughter that William and Kate have, she can be the successor to the English throne. It's great to know that we're still in the Commonwealth and we're still pledging our allegiance to the Queen. It feels great.
Yeah, well, they also don't allow scientists doing research here in Canada to talk to the press. They have minders.
Oh, wow.
That's
wow.
Can you imagine? And of course, that we're talking about science funded by Canadian taxpayers. It's remarkable.
Yeah.
You know, I think you and I are gonna, if you put this together, you come up with a pretty pessimistic view of the future of journalism.
No, I don't think that, because you have to imagine that I myself, someone who was just, you know, as a student on the same radio station you're on now a few years ago, I'm now getting paid to investigate and I'm talking about drones, I'm talking about warrantless wiretapping. The fact that this is even being spoken about in bigger circles, and I've gotten on television here, I've been in bigger newspapers, on big radio stations. So I think I'm very hopeful. You know, the alternative media is springing up. People are asking more questions. People are trying to diversify their worldview and to get away from the monopolies of information that we have in the big corporate media. So I think that's a good thing. And I think as more people unplug and as more people become skeptical and start asking questions, they're really just going to remove their allegiance. They're not going to put that much into politics, and they're going to try to live their lives on their own, have their own liberty in their lives. I think that's really what's most important, and that's really what I'm trying to strive to do.
Right. Now, do you see that from your colleagues as well, that same sense that of optimism that you feel, and the same sense, that same desire to push stories that are, I guess, convenient to the various narratives that the parties, the big major parties try to spin?
I think in my organization we're different. We are sort of the watchdog thing, and we're against the corporate media. We're going against their model. So really what we're trying to do is change the narrative and to change this whole pack journalism. I think most people who watch media and read newspapers and watch television, they don't really understand how much is subject to interpretation. And I'll give you a good example is this Chuck Hagel hearing in the United States. He is set to become the next Secretary of Defense. Basically, he'll hold the keys to the American Empire. And all the major publications that covered this and were giving the news, were talking about how he stumbled on Iran and he was, you know, he couldn't answer any questions. The fact is that that was framed by three or four journalists and that somehow became the narrative. When in fact, if you listen to the whole thing, he admitted outright that Iraq was the biggest blunder that we ever had since Vietnam, and he had some great lines in there, but of course that's never covered because it doesn't fit the narrative. So what we're trying to do is always alter the narrative and have some sort of different information that you can give to people so they can make better decisions and be better informed.
Right. I actually was listening to that confrontation with John McCain, where he said everything you just spoke of, and it wasn't part of the narrative. But I'm so used to seeing that, and I have so many stories here in Canada. I actually haven't even talked about it this week because, like I say, our politics have descended into something quite like American politics, and so it keeps me busy for the most part. When I talk politics here on the program. I'm busy with Canadian politics and don't have time for all the fun people that are in American politics. They're really, it's very colorful American politics are. Is that motivating? Does that make you laugh? What do you think of it, the difference in Canadian and American politics? Do you want to have at that?
Yeah, sure. I think in Canadian politics, it's very helpful in that there are many debates that have already been settled. Nobody really talks about abortion outright in their campaigns. Nobody really talks about gay marriage, whether it's good or bad, really. These are all things that are settled. The social issues are all settled in Canada. And in the U.S., they're still coming to grips with that. It's still, at its heart, is a very Puritan nation. It's very religious. You drive through basically any small town or city here in the United States of America, and churches line the street. There will always be a church street. I grew up in North Carolina, and my family was ostracized because we didn't go to church, and we weren't involved in these things. So there'll always be this cultural war, this sort of social enigma that they're always dealing with. But even so, I think the trend that we're seeing now from the younger generations is that the culture wars are lost. They're over. Now, the older generations still will be there, and they'll still pick their fights, and they'll still try to get involved every way they can. But the younger people are realizing that the government should not be there to discriminate against people. It should be there to give everyone the equal rights and equal accessibility and equal options. Otherwise, all we're doing is we're putting groups down, and we've done that too long in American history, and I think people are tired of it. So in that sense, it's getting a little better, but still, it's not as good as it is in Canada, which I believe is still one of the freest countries we have today in terms of social policy, at least.
Right, right. Well, actually, there was a story this morning that Canada has dropped 10 places in the Press Freedom Index. From 10th to 20th, we've dropped, and this is the World Press Freedom Index. And, of course, this is all under the governance of Stephen Bloody Harper, who, by the way, you may or may not know because it's rarely reported here in Canada, but he's actually a white evangelical Christian.
Yeah, no, that's true. But also for that press ranking thing, I think one of the biggest cases that I've seen, and I know you probably disagree with them, but Ezra Levant out there in, I guess he's in Toronto right now, just saying something on television, and he's brought before a human rights commission. Look, I don't agree with the guy on a lot of things he says. I agree with some of the things he says, but I don't think he deserves to be brought before a commission. And, you know, how many times would we, Carl, be brought before a commission for things we say that the government doesn't like or people get offended by? I think that's a standard that we have to be for. We have to be for freedom of the press, freedom of expression, you know, because otherwise, what are we fighting for? Rights for if we won't defend them for people that we find disgusting?
Well, right, but you and I don't think, would ever pick a group of people and put them down for being a member of, like let's say, the Aboriginals, someone who Ezra Levant has attacked in so many ways, and really, you say disgusting. That's a good word for Mr. Levant, in terms of the approach that he takes towards his disagreement with, you know, for example, the Idle No More movement that's taking place here in Canada. The only description I have for them is outright racist. So,
I agree. But the point is that I believe that the free market of ideas should trump them out. People should naturally say, "Well, this guy is terrible. Why is he saying that?" and tune out. I don't think we need the government to step in or human rights commissions or licenses. Actually, and there's a plan afoot right now in the European Union to only have licenses to certain journalists. So it's the government who will have the right to say, you are a journalist and you are not. I think that's dangerous. I think, you know, whether or not we agree with some things people say, we have to defend their right to say it. And we have to just try to argue them down using reason and thoughts and ideas that are better, and not use force to try to get them to change their mind or to basically shut up.
That's a very interesting perspective, and I would have a hard time disagreeing with you, Yale, in that regard. I don't know that I would actually want this guy on my airwaves. I certainly wouldn't allow the Sun News Network on my TV. But as you say, the marketplace of ideas. And yet, I think of, when you started to say that, I started to think of Ron Paul and his idea that that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was unconstitutional. He thinks that people should be allowed to deny black service in a restaurant and so forth. And
no, see, to make that specific claim, it's not to say that he was for or against that. It's just about what the role of the government is. It's the same way if a black store owner has KKK owners coming inside and wanting to buy stuff. Is he allowed to refuse service? I mean, it's really, we have to figure out what is the role of government and what is the role of private business. I think that's sort of his angle. And I think, unfortunately, because of the history, you know, you will get smeared as a racist or any sort of bad terms. But it goes both ways. And I think it's still the principle that matters. And we can argue about what we want the specific rules to be, but still, I think at the end, the principle is what is important.
Well, listen, I want to thank you for the conversation. It was interesting. It's 9:45 here, and I got to wrap up and set up Democracy Now. Yale, I wish I'd spoken to you more. Now, you're headed for Austria, right?
Oh, yes, I will be. But actually, Carl, I must admit that I was on at 10 a.m. right after you, and I still have been continuing my show in podcast form. So if people want to listen in, that's libertyinexile.com. And I hope to have you on, Carl. That'd be a very interesting exchange. We can have more time. Free flow of information, podcasting, and again, we don't have to be restricted by the rules of the Canadian broadcasting.
Okay, I like that idea. That's a super idea. When are you headed to Austria?
I'm leaving in about a month's time. I'll be living in the city of Vienna for at least the next 2 years to start my master's degree and start looking into the European Union a little bit more.
So then why don't we do this again next Friday?
That sounds good. We'll talk to you then.
Sounds great, Yale. You take care of yourself, and much appreciated.
All right. Thanks a lot, Carl.
Cheers, Yale. Okay, that was Yale Lisowski. And as he said, his site, if you want to listen to his program, something he began here at CJLO was Liberty in Exile. You go to libertyinexile.com, and you can listen to Yale. And a unique and interesting perspective. And certainly glad to talk to him. A good man.
Visit libertyinexile.com.